from the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast. This is Ag Day.
Is a pecan revolution on the way?
So we've probably added since that time probably 60,000 acres of pecan.
See what's shaking up the industry in Georgia. Wondering when we could see movement on a new farm bill? House Ag Republicans have an answer. As a tale of two wheat crops emerges.
And, you know, there's a lot of residual dryness, even with the break of the drought that we had last year.
How that's impacting prices right now on Ag Day.
Ag Day, presented by Pioneer. What's next happens when the testing grounds meet the proving grounds. Pioneer, what's next happens here.
Good morning, I'm Clinton Griffiths for a second day. Wheat futures continuing to trek higher on Tuesday. They're being pushed into the green on weather concerns. USDA now rating 50% of the winter wheat crop as good to excellent. That's down 5% from the previous week, but it's still higher than compared to last year at this time when only 26% of the crop was rated good to excellent. Ag Day's Michelle Rook joins me. And Michelle, some farmers have seen it all this spring, from heat to wind, even some frost.
Clint, it's really a tale of two different crops, with the soft red winter wheat crop seeing an improvement in conditions, while in the hard red winter wheat production areas, crop ratings have been quickly deteriorating due to weather problems. And when you combine that with some global production issues, the market has been putting in some weather premium.
The state-by-state crop ratings tell the story as hard red winter wheat crop conditions have quickly deteriorated, mainly due to dryness, but also other weather extremes. Oklahoma led the way with a good to excellent rating down 11%, and number one producer Kansas dropped 7%, with only 36% of the crop now in good to excellent condition.
There have been parts of Kansas that have gotten some moisture, but the western part, and then as you move south into Panhandle of Texas and Oklahoma, that's where the areas have been worst. There's a lot of residual dryness, even with the break of the drought that we had last year.
In fact, while the percentage of the hard red winter wheat area in D1 to D4 level drought is well under last year on the latest drought monitor, at 24%, it's still up 6 points from the previous week, causing concern.
We did not adequately, fill up subsoil moisture to the extent that we could go through another period of dryness this year.
Beadle says there's rain in the extended forecast for some of the dry HRW areas, but earlier models have disappointed. If that repeats, the market may add more weather premium. And it's not just trading U.S. weather.
In addition to that, Black Sea has been fairly dry, especially in parts of the western part of the Black Sea. And then you get into Europe, and they've been a little bit wetter. And everyone is also watching Australia.
Plus, India's reserves are at 16-year lows, and they may need to import an estimated 2 to 5 million tons of wheat. Beadle also says the market is adding premium with escalation of the Black Sea War. I'm Michelle Rourke reporting for Ag Day.
All right, thanks, Michelle. By Memorial Day, that's when Republicans on the House Ag Committee say they will have a markup of the new farm bill. Officials saying on X, formerly known as Twitter, that the bill will strengthen the farm safety net, national security, and conservation spending, all without cutting SNAP benefits. House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson saying recently that of the 435 members of Congress, over half have never debated or voted on a farm bill before, calling that a unique challenge that requires a lot of education to bring people up to speed. Ag Day's Michelle Rook attended a farm bill listening session in South Dakota earlier this month. And as we reported, members of the Senate Ag Committee also expressed optimism about getting a farm bill done yet this year, along with putting more farm in the farm bill. Medications given to treat seasonal flu in humans may also help fight against the avian flu virus that's impacting some dairy herds right now. The CDC is saying drugs such as Tamiflu, Relenza, and Rabivab can be used to treat the virus. The virus now confirmed in 33 dairy herds across 8 states and one dairy worker in Texas. However, officials continue to assure the public their risk of contracting H5N1 remains low. In most cases of the virus in dairy cattle, the symptoms are mild, such as reduced appetite, decreased milk production, and fever, and the cattle typically recover within a few weeks. Wild birds are believed to be spreading the virus, prompting officials to advise farmers to increase biosecurity measures. The quiet weather pattern many have seen for the past few days may be on the way out. Meteorologist Matt Engelbrecht has a look ahead.
Well, the big story is going to be not only the rain, but the warmth and severe weather that could unfold towards the tail end of the week. Remember when we talked yesterday and the day before, middle part of the week, ridge of high pressure developing in and across the United States for your Wednesday and Thursday. As we transition away from that ridge, could be looking at some severe weather for portions of the United States, then both on Thursday, but especially Friday, Saturday, and possibly into Sunday as well. Let's go ahead and take a look at it. This is Wednesday, early in the morning. You won't see much in the way of widespread coverage of severe weather, but where we transition from this shallow trough and this strong ridge right in between, if we pick up any kind of thunderstorm activity, that could quickly grow into a severe thunderstorm or two. Again, there's Thursday at 2 a.m. As you go through the afternoon, we start to get from a ridge over to a trough, and it's right in the bottom of this trough that we could be seeing some stronger thunderstorms develop both Friday morning and through Friday afternoon. So again, we'll talk more about that transition coming up in just a little bit. And planting continues to roll on for many, and that in Nebraska seems to be moving right along on plant 24. Looks like the weather is cooperating for him there as he keeps out of the fields and keeps watch on metrics. I'll have more in your forecast coming up.
Traffic is starting to pick back up at the Panama Canal. Information from IMF Port Watch shows that the daily vessel crossings at the canal have increased, with a 7-day moving average reaching 25 vessels last week. That's up from a low of about 21 at the end of January due to extreme drought conditions. However, the average was 35 crossings per day before the drought. Meteorologists in Panama report the country is transitioning to a wetter seasonal pattern, which is expected to continue through mid-May. The added rainfall, along with increased ship crossings, is expected to gradually alleviate the restrictions on global trade resulting from canal disruptions since last year. Meanwhile, efforts continue to help reopen the port of Baltimore following the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Crews opening a third temporary channel. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers anticipates also opening a limited access channel by the end of the month to support barge containers and vessels transporting cars and farm equipment. Meanwhile, Baltimore is suing the owner and manager of the ship that crashed into the bridge last month that led to the collapse and deaths of six people. The suit accuses both of providing the vessel with an incompetent crew that lacked proper skill and training. The claim says the ship left the port despite indications it had an inconsistent power supply, and the city is seeking unspecified damages from both companies. An update on a case we've been following for you involving an Arizona rancher accused of killing a migrant on his property. A judge declaring a mistrial in that case. 75-year-old George Allen Kelly was charged with second-degree murder in the shooting death of Gabriel Quen Budimia. The shooting happened in January of last year on Kelly's property near the border. Quen Budimia lived just south of the border in Nogales, Mexico. Prosecutors said Kelly recklessly fired 9 shots from a rifle toward a group of men, including Quen Budimia. Now, Kelly has said that he fired warning shots in the air, but didn't shoot directly at anyone. Jurors couldn't reach a consensus on that shooting, and after more than 15 hours of deliberation, the judge declared a mistrial. Later this month, a hearing will be held to see if the Santa Cruz County Attorney's Office wants to retry the case. As we said, it was a second day of strength in the wheat market. We'll take a look at that and all of our markets coming up next. And later, a nutty idea is brewing in Georgia as pecan growers get optimistic about the future. We'll find out why today in the country.
Ag Day is brought to you by Germinator Closing Wheels. Germinator Steel Closing Wheels provides a 13 bushel advantage per acre in no-till and a 7 bushel advantage per acre in conventional. Do you have enough room in your bin to switch to the Germinator?
Corn futures were higher for a third straight session, and soybeans and wheat were also on the positive side on Tuesday. Ag Day's Michelle Rook is back with a look on how long this trend could possibly continue in markets now.
Well, another higher day in grains on Tuesday. Dwayne Bussey with Bolt Marketing is back with us. And Dwayne, we continue to see risk premium being put in the wheat market. How much more do you think we're going to see put in that market, or how much more risk premium do we need?
I don't know if we need a whole lot. I'm hoping there's a whole lot coming in, though. No, you know, the bullish story is that, you know, we're dry in the southern plains. But remember, those crop conditions started so high. That's why they're easy to decrease from here. And rightfully so, you know, over winter dormancy, you know, crop conditions can be high. But it's really, you know, from here forward, what rains we get in Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, that will really make the crop. So the story is that, you know, the winter wheat conditions are declining. We're dry in southern Russia, and the Russia-Ukraine war is escalating. So we're building in some premium there on that. But remember, the funds are hardly short this wheat complex, and maybe it's just them not wanting to be as short as they were before.
So wheat has been pulling corn and soybeans along, but when you look at a technical picture, we've actually gotten above some pretty key moving averages in wheat, corn, and beans, haven't we?
We really have. The charts look great this week now all of a sudden. It's kind of funny because the end of last week, it looked pretty horrible. And I mean, no, myself, I was talking about May option expiration coming here. And remember when we had that in March, we had a horrible liquidation into that option expiration. But so far this week, actually, grains look great. Chart patterns look good. And a lack of farmer selling is helping the corn market rally just a little bit more.
Is this the start of a bigger commodity bull run or a fun short covering rally?
We need that one spark yet, Michelle. And I keep talking about that. You know, we need a weather scare. We need money flow to come in, a story to scare these funds out of their short positions. You know, a little bit of short covering wheat, which really we're higher now than we've been in a month and a half. So this is a good start to it. It could be. I just can't confidently say it quite yet.
The thing that's different, though, is like you said, we haven't had the farmer selling. Do you expect that we will at some point?
I think we will. I think the only reason we haven't had the farmer selling is corn. Is those first couple of days you go out in the corn planter, you're kind of struggling with monitors and adjusting everything, and everything's pretty new again. I think that's why we're not selling. I think you get another update here or there, and everyone's chilled and relaxed in the corn planter, and they got their headset on, then they call and make some sales. I'm afraid, you know, I'd like to say 460 in July is a good place to get started selling that old crop.
Thanks for joining us, Dwayne Bussey with Bolt Marketing. We'll have more Ag Day coming up.
For marketing advice, call Bolt Marketing, a futures and options brokerage firm.
As I talked about earlier, coming up for our Wednesday, as we start to see that ridge high pressure move in and across the United States, it may get a severe weather risk into Oklahoma and Texas. This is going to shift, and the severe weather, the severity of the severe weather is going to increase out here towards the east as we get into Thursday and into Friday. But there's a look at it coming up for your Wednesday. A few tornadoes, damaging winds, heavy rain, large hail, anywhere you have kind of that yellow outline into Oklahoma and Texas. Now, as we go forward, the big situation, the big story is going to be that transition from a trough to a ridge. That's where we get our first chance of some severe weather on Wednesday. And then that ridge transitioning back to a trough, or right in between those two systems, is where we have the greatest lift in the atmosphere. So as I take this all the way into Saturday and Sunday, you can see a couple of rounds of in terms of severe weather, couple of rounds of severe weather across the United States. It's not until next Tuesday and Wednesday that we start to flatten out with the ridge of high pressure that's still off the East Coast, and then another trough digging back out here towards the west. So this is going to be kind of in between those two systems, but certainly be on the lookout for some stronger storms across the plains Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. By Monday and Tuesday, we start to lose the chances of severe weather. Overall, rain chances will be around, but not until this next trough moves through are we expecting widespread rain or even strong thunderstorms. So the precipitation estimate, now this does include some of those stronger storms that could form Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'll take you through your Wednesday into your Thursday, pocket some heavy rain into Oklahoma, and then advancing then more to the north and to the northeast to follow that digging trough. So kind of the two bullseyes. So one into Oklahoma, and could be looking at not only severe weather, but heavy downpours. And then up here towards Minnesota and Iowa, we could be seeing some heavy downpours as well, including the possibility of some hail and some strong winds, depending on how strong some of those thunderstorms become. Now, this is through Friday, so that's obviously all day Wednesday, Thursday, into your Friday night. This entire system is going to advance from the west to the east as we go forward. We're pretty much done with the snowfall estimate back down towards zero in and across the United States. The colder air with this next system is going to stay back up to the north. Start off with St. Peter's, Missouri. Mostly sunny, high around 70 degrees, low about 46. Sloan, New York, you got some morning showers, high around 47, low of 30. Circleville, Utah, mostly sunny, high of 71 degrees.
The owner of Smithfield in the U.S. is reporting it saw profits increase in the first quarter. WH Group calling it a substantial improvement in its U.S. operations, which offset a decline in China. It reports operating profits for the first 3 months increased 37%, coming in at $501 million. And it says higher pork prices and some reforms helped it cut losses related to hog farming, slaughtering, and sales of fresh and frozen pork in both the U.S. and Mexico. Bloomberg reporting it's a sign the worst may be behind for the company in North America, which was hit last year by higher costs and weaker consumer demand, and may be a sign of things to come for rivals Tyson Foods and JBSSA, which will report their earnings next month. And it appears China's sow herd is contracting. In fact, the country's ag ministry is saying that its hogs, sows, and pig herds are all declining. It comes amid Beijing's efforts to decrease production capacity. Officials are hoping prices will recover in the second quarter. China had almost 40 million sows at the end of March, down 500,000 head from the previous month and down more than 7% from the same time a year ago. When it comes to pork imports in China, they've been cut in half, dropping 53% in the first 3 months of the year when compared to the first 3 months of 2023. Hey, there may be a revolution brewing in Georgia. We're talking about a pecan revolution. We'll hear from the industry and why it's excited about the future in the country. Could a pecan revolution be coming? Damon Jones of the Georgia Farm Monitor reports on Georgia's booming production right now and some new market strategies that are shaking up the industry.
There's a whole lot of shaking going on here in Georgia, as it is responsible for nearly a third of the country's pecan production. And that is unlikely to change in the near future, with a number of trees finally reaching maturation.
When the prices went high back around 2010, we started having a lot of planting taking place. So our planting in Georgia, we've probably added since that time probably 60,000 acres of pecans. And now we're starting to see those plantings contribute to the volume that's out there. And so what used to be an off crop in Georgia, or a bad crop in Georgia, used to be about 40 million pounds of pecans in the state. Now, an off year in Georgia is more like 80 to 85 million pounds.
However, that record production could put downward pressure on the price growers will see, especially with a chief trading partner buying less of their product.
Pecan growers normally make good money when there's a good, strong in-shell pecan market. And right now, we don't really have a good in-shell market. China was a tremendous in-shell market, and so that's why we saw the prices go up so high and do so well for growers. But with the tariffs that came on in 2018, that of course cut that out.
That means new markets must be explored. And one option is the country with the second highest population.
We had some buyers from India over here a few months ago, meeting with pecan suppliers here in Georgia and throughout the U.S. And there was a lot of demand, a lot of interest there. The tariff reduction going from 100% down to 30%, I think, is going to open the door.
But until then, growers are going to have to do more with less, and the University of Georgia's breeding program is looking to make that job a little easier.
Long term, we need to get better varieties in those orchards that have a higher yield potential. So a lot of the older varieties that we were growing, that yield potential, you know, maximum consistently would be around 1,000, maybe 1,200 pounds an acre. We need varieties that are going to provide 1,500 to 2,000 pounds an acre or more, and do that at a lower cost of production.
With that in mind, there is one thing growers are encouraged to do in order to get the most out of their trees.
One thing that has become very popular in the last few years that we see a lot of positive benefits to is hedge pruning. So you basically, with hedge pruning, you go down the length of the tree row and cut everything off a certain distance away from the trunk, and then you top that tree to bring the size of the tree down. And what that does, it allows you to bring that entire tree into a size that whatever sprayer you're using can cover that crop.
Reporting from Tift County, I'm Damon Jones for the Farm Monitor.
Our thanks as always to Damon Jones and the Georgia Farm Monitor for sharing that story with us. And that's all the time we have this morning. We're sure glad you tuned in. From all of us here at Ag Day, I'm Clinton Griffiths. Have a great night.